sense of adventure. He was dressed to thrill wherever he went. He said, let's make love on a mountain top, under the stars on a big hard rock. I said, in these shoes, I don't think so. I said, honey, let's do it here. So I'm sitting at a bar in Guadalajara. In walks a guy with a faraway look in his eyes. He said, I've got a powerful horse outside. Climb on the back, I'll take you for a ride. I know a little place we can get there for the break of day. I said, in these shoes, no way, Jose. I said, honey, let's stay right here. Doubt you'd survive. I said, honey, let's do it.
The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, it is that time of the day again. Time for our daily get-together. And we can find out what other shoe has dropped. Yes, if you tuned in early for the pre-show music, it was a bunch of shoe songs. I don't know how many shoes are in that closet. Maybe, what's her name? Melania has a closet like Imelda Marcos with thousands of shoes because the shoes keep dropping left and right. Yesterday, we were still all, you know, going a bit berserk over the Trump leaking classified intel from Israel to the Russians after they specifically, implicitly, explicitly said the Russians are not to get this information. And Trump's like, I don't know where I got it from. Someone told me. I don't know. It's okay. I'm allowed to do it because I'm the president. I can do anything. You know how that goes, right? Just like my hero.
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
Yeah, except sometimes it is. So we did shoe songs. Anyway, so yesterday I run out for an hour. My kid graduates from high school the end of the week, and she's actually going to be a camp counselor this year at a summer sleepaway camp. And so we have to get her stuff. And we were gone for an hour. I come back in the house. We had music on in the car, just, you know, because she's my kid. And get back in the house. I turn on the TV and I see the Chyron breaking news. And now, come on, every day everything is breaking news. So I don't worry about it. But then I see Trump asks Comey to drop the FBI investigation against Michael Flynn. It's like every day there's something else and another, what I believe is an impeachable offense. So who do I most want to talk to about this? Oh, and I got to do, oh, I did it again. Hold on a second, Jason, because I have a new setup here and I keep forgetting to mute the speakers on the other machine. Now I can do it. So last night I'm flipping through the channels, and who do I see on with Chris Hayes but my dear friend, the wonderful Jason Leopold. Now, I'd already asked Jason to come on the show, but I thought great minds think alike. Hey, Jason.
Hey, Nicole, how are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm doing well, yeah. Busy.
Keeping busy, I'm sure.
Moving around.
Yeah, no kidding. Up. No kidding. Well, first of all, yeah. I should say, the last time you were on the program, you were with another news organization. You are now a senior investigative reporter for BuzzFeed News and making a lot
first
of noise.
Of all,
oh, shoot. Oh, last time, hold on. I unmuted myself. So how are things at BuzzFeed?
It's great. I'm really enjoying it. I mean, I'm part of the BuzzFeed News investigations team. Not sure if everyone knows that BuzzFeed News has an amazing, amazing investigative unit. And so I'm part of that. More than a dozen other journalists who are part of this investigative spotlight unit and really just tackling big stories.
Now is that the division that Michael Hastings was with before he died?
I don't think Hastings was with that division. No.
Okay.
Because it's fairly new, say about 3 years.
Oh, okay.
And this year, it's really grown to more than a dozen journalists.
Oh, nice. Well, so it's not only...
As well as journalists in the UK as well, who are part of this investigative unit.
Great.
So,
well, that's awesome.
Along with everything else that BuzzFeed and other news organizations do as well, we have this fantastic unit just really taking deep dives into hot button issues. And one of our reporters was a finalist for a Pulitzer Prize this year for a story that he was working on. So I'd certainly encourage people to check out some of the work there.
Great. And of course, I'll put a link up on my blog at NicoleSandler.com where I post the day's show to your work. But people can find you at BuzzFeed.com/Jason Leopold. At least it's easy
Correct.
To find you there.
So, yes. Yes, exactly. It's actually really easy. If you've got the URL, you can just see what's there. The past couple of months have been
crazy.
Really busy with what's going on here. But I'm really enjoying the freedom that I have. To work on a bunch of investigative stories and continue some of the smaller FOIA-related centric pieces that I can also flesh out into larger stories. And I've had a couple recently about Trump as well.
Well, it's almost like, is there anything else? This is my dilemma in recent weeks, is I try to stay on top of everything. And I'm not, obviously, I'm not a hard news person, but I try to stay on top of everything that's going on, especially when it relates to, say, the president. Now, it's impossible. I feel like every time I turn around, there's some other major catastrophic story. Like, I wasn't kidding.
Right.
I went out yesterday. I had been watching the news most of the day while I did my show. You know, I keep up with what's going on. And it was all, you know, about Trump leaking information to the Russians. And during the show, I find out it was confirmed that it was intel from the Israelis, who had specifically said, we don't want the Russians to get this information. Because, again, Russia, close allies of the Iranians, who are Israel's, you know, arch enemy, their world nemesis. And Trump what the hell? I'll tell. It is mind boggling, and so I'm out for
really
an hour.
I mean, I come
home and see this.
It is mind boggling with that particular story. One, you have, as you noted, you had the information that was revealed Monday, right?
Right.
The revelation that there was intelligence, highly classified intelligence, leaked to the Russian foreign minister, ambassador. I wouldn't say leaked, that Donald Trump told them about an ISIS plot. And Tuesday, the natural follow-up is, who is the Middle Eastern country in question, or our Middle Eastern ally? And find out that it's Israel. And then later in the evening, you know, you have kind of completely blindsided by, you know, another piece of breaking news, which is just, I suppose some folks could have seen that coming. And if you know how James Comey has operated, and if you watched him, say, over the past decade, going back to the Bush years, it shouldn't really come as a surprise. And it's this time where this kind of history, you know, looking back to the Bush years is really important. I mean, people are looking back to the Bush years now, with thinking, and some folks are thinking, like, oh, you know what? It wasn't that bad.
Right.
It was bad in the Bush.
It was really
okay?
bad.
So let's just make that very clear. It was bad. But looking back at this time, because you have a lot of the same players who are still around, and at the time, James Comey was a U.S. attorney. He had testified about the fact that he refused to sign off on this Patriot Act, on spying. There was this dramatic scene, you know, at the hospital with John Ashcroft.
Right.
Folks can look it up. Point being that, you know, at that time we were able to learn about how James Comey operates. So
that he had integrity. That you know, despite the fact that he was part of the Bush administration, there was real integrity there. We thought, okay, this is a guy who's honest and stands up for what's not just right, but correct.
Yeah, at the time, it seemed that this was the narrative that was out there.
Right.
I'm not really going to go and say, you know, completely agree with you on that.
Okay.
Because there's plenty of things that James Comey should and could be criticized for.
Oh, yes.
In the way he was operating the FBI.
Okay.
And I will note this, that no less than 6 months ago, you had Harry Reid, you had a number of Democrats,
Chuck Schumer, all
saying
of them.
That James Comey was worse than, you know, the worst thing to happen to the FBI since J. Edgar Hoover.
Well,
those were headlines and
yes,
newspapers.
And but when you look at what he did during the campaign, especially in the last month of the campaign, it was like, what the fuck? What is this guy doing?
Right.
I mean, talk about
exactly.
Overstepping bounds. So yeah.
So with that said, you know, we get into where we are. These past 4 months, it's very clear that James Comey and Trump were going to butt heads, particularly as it became more apparent to many of us and certainly members of Congress that the FBI was in fact conducting a probe. As I reported, by the way, you know, last November or October, November, a couple of weeks after the election, that there was an FBI probe into, you know, the Trump campaign. At the time, mm-hmm. I didn't know what it was about. We more or less know what it's about now. So
now, can I stop you there for a second, Jason? Because before the election, you had a FOIA request in, like an urgent nature, because we were coming up on an election. Wasn't it about?
I sued the FBI. So it was a FOIA lawsuit, and I said to them, I'm sorry to cut you off on that, I said, this is so urgent and in the public interest. We need to know if the FBI is conducting any investigation, investigation into the Trump campaign. At the time, it centered around two things that I asked for, which were comments that Trump made on the campaign trail, in which he called on Russia to hack into.
Right, which we all remember. Email. Yes.
Right. So the FBI responded to me after the election, even though I filed this lawsuit a couple of months before, and responded to me by refusing to confirm or deny that there was an investigation. I've since come to find out that the FBI obviously does have one, and they've said that they will no longer assert this, what's known as a Glomar, related to my lawsuit, which is continuing. It's ongoing still, Nicole.
Wow.
With regard to whether or not they have an investigation. So that was really kind of like the first public insight into, you know, what was going on with the FBI.
That's pretty stunning. So you had filed this lawsuit to get the information before the election. They were silent until after the election, and then they responded by saying, we're not going to give you any information anyway. Then later on, we find, with Comey on the stand, testifying before some subcommittee, that yes, indeed, there is an investigation into the Trump campaign and their ties with Russia.
It's an investigation that's pretty wide-ranging. I mean, it's not just centered on one thing or a few people. It's covering a broad area and broad subject matters, all related to Russia, yes, and the campaign. But it covers many different subject areas, many different, say, incidents or issues, you know, whether it's with Michael Flynn, the former National Security Advisor, and his the exchange of money, his failure to register as a lobbyist.
Agent.
It's a number of different subjects. And as I noted, even what I had asked for, simply Trump's comments about calling on Russia to hack Hillary Clinton
to find the 30,000
emails.
Right.
Yeah.
Find the missing 30,000 emails.
So that, the FBI is saying that is an investigation as well, as it relates, you know, they're saying, hey, Jason, we can't or we won't give you documents because this will interfere with our investigation. So the investigation encompasses, whatever it is, encompasses quite a bit.
It's stunning. So, Jason Leopold, I'm looking at your the articles you have up at BuzzFeed.com/Jason Leopold. The most recent one is from yesterday. And, you know, this I find hysterical. The headline reads, do you drink work odd hours? The FBI says you could be an insider threat. Well, aside from the drinking, because we understand Trump doesn't drink, he's the insider threat, isn't he?
Well, it's these documents that took a few years to get from the FBI. This is what's known as their insider threat training. People who work in government at the FBI and other government agencies, and who may be an insider threat, someone or people who they fear could leak intelligence to whomever, journalists, engage in espionage. One of the things that's just so fascinating and funny about these slides and these documents is that it actually says anyone who brags, and it uses the word brag, by the way, anyone who brags about how much they know is an insider threat.
There you go.
So,
I know. I'm reading through these slides that you have posted there. And again, I'll have a link on the blog at NicoleSandler.com.
It's very difficult to obviously, not think about the current state of affairs particularly as it relates to the White House, when reading this.
Right. Now, the other part of it is this White House, this administration, every time there's one of these shoe-dropping stories, another just mind-blowing, like, oh, my God, how is this happening? It goes back to, it all seems to go back to Trump. But they try to divert everybody and say, well, it's not the story, it's the leaker. It's whoever is leaking it that's the problem.
Right.
So they're saying that the fact that all this shit is happening, that Trump is giving, top secret information to the Russians, or threatening James Comey with clandestine recordings or whatever, none of that is the problem. It's the leaks that are the problem. Now, this goes back to the whole whistleblowing issue, doesn't it? Because I consider what
it
they
does.
Consider a leaker is what I consider a whistleblower. I think whistleblowers are heroes, but Obama prosecuted more whistleblowers than any other president before him, didn't he?
He did. And you know, let me also just note that these past 4 months, has it only been 4 months?
You believe
it? Is that right?
Yes.
Just 4 months?
Yes.
So these past 4 months, a lot has happened. And you can understand the sense of outrage when you see that the reaction, not just from Republicans, particularly Republicans, and the White House, is to find the leakers and prosecute them. That's not unique to Donald Trump or the Republicans.
Right.
Dianne Feinstein and the Democrats for over the past 8 years said the exact same thing. When things were intelligence and information was leaking out, and so I by the way, and I should note that I'm not making any judgment on whether you should prosecute leakers or what. I mean, it's a fact that President Obama has prosecuted more people for leaking and whistleblowing under the Espionage Act than than any other president combined. So. The issue the Obama administration was incredibly aggressive about leaks and plugging leaks. Here, as I noted, even last night on Chris Hayes' show, what you have is you have people that are showing absolutely no loyalty to Donald Trump or anyone in this administration, and whereas. With Obama, there was quite a bit of loyalty, directed to him personally, and his policies, his style of governing, that extended across all government agencies, and so that's why there was just this, real sense of, if you're leaking during that time, you're harming. Not just national security, you're harming, the goals of that administration. And so that's why you'd often see folks like Dianne Feinstein step up and, even though the leaks would revolve around, here's what the CIA drone program amounted to, here's how many civilians were killed, here's, what we were learning about, they turned their attention on the media or rather the people who were leaking to the media. Here, however, it's just so egregious right now that, you're hearing about how Trump is, what he's doing behind the scenes, what's happening. But then you're hearing directly, or you're seeing directly from the president, who is tweeting, prosecute the leakers. We didn't get that sort of the candidness, the hubris, just the way in which this is coming out is just, we've never seen anything like it
and,
before.
I mean,
it's truly unprecedented.
It's not only prosecute the leakers, it's prosecute the journalists who are doing their jobs by asking the questions and trying to get at the truth.
And that's actually something that was buried in the New York Times story yesterday. Because before that, before the discussion, apparently, if this two-page memo characterizes, if this characterization of this two-page memo that Comey wrote is correct, during that meeting, that Donald Trump had with Comey, the first thing that he talked to Comey about was putting journalists in jail.
Yeah.
For publishing information.
Right.
And then he turned to Michael Flynn. So, you know, perhaps Comey felt this, he's got to, you know, he really has to memorialize in writing for whatever the reason was, you know, whether he decided to write a book because he wanted to build a case about possible obstruction, or maybe just thought that nobody would ever believe, you know, what was happening, whatever, you know, whatever it is. I mean, that was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
So,
now, as a journalist, Jason Leopold, and one who has been dubbed the FOIA terrorist by the government,
yes.
Does this frighten you?
You know, it doesn't frighten me. I'm certainly, you know, I in terms of publishing and going out there and continuing to do the type of work I do, it doesn't frighten me. And the reason it doesn't frighten me is because, one, I feel that BuzzFeed, where I'm working, mm-hmm. First of all, they have the best lawyers, the best media lawyers, best
right.
First Amendment lawyers. So I certainly feel I'd be well protected. I'm also patient, Nicole. You know, sometimes 2 years in jail if I had to wait. I mean, I wait that long for FOIA requests.
But we don't want you in jail. No.
I'm not frightened. I think that's rhetoric. I don't think it'll ever happen. I do get concerned, however, on the state level, on the more of the local level.
Huh.
I don't know if your listeners are aware of the reporter. I think it was Wisconsin. Could be mistaken. But the reporter was simply asking a question to a government official,
right.
And was arrested for asking a question. You know, I'm more concerned about the aggressiveness that's happening on, you know, the more state local levels than on the federal level. I think it would be very, very difficult. I think that as journalists, we've all gotten to the point where we accept and we understand that if the government wants to grab our communications, or if they're you know, taking our communications, or if they're secretly, you know, seizing our phone records, that's happening. So we take steps to, you know, protect ourselves, employ types of operational security, you know, that we need to in order to protect, you know, our sources. But I think one thing that is, you know, amazing to see is that at least in these past 4 months, and I think we can both agree that the media did not do a fantastic job. Some individual reporters did, but as a whole, when it came to covering Trump versus covering Clinton last year.
No, not at all.
You know, to have that argument or debate and you know, but my opinion is that it wasn't a level playing field. But to see in these past few months how the media is really, you know, aggressively covering this is great.
It is.
It's
the newspapers. It's the newspapers.
Yes.
It's not television. Television is sort of like the afterthought.
Right.
They're picking up on what, you know, the newspapers are doing. And I got to say, Washington Post and New York Times are really, they're earning their stripes these last few months.
Yeah, no, it's the classic gumshoe old school reporting methods that are being employed because, you know, what's amazing to me is I have not seen the release of documents. I haven't seen, even though this is a very, very young administration, I haven't seen documents being leaked. The fact that Comey's memo, right, a 2-page unclassified memo, aside from everything else that he apparently wrote down, but the fact that that did not leak. I mean, one, I think it's clear that it was disclosed, so he could have some cover, perhaps, and Congress can ask him to testify, and he'll testify in a public setting.
And there is a request to have him come before and testify in the open before the Senate Intelligence Committee, I believe on Tuesday, the 24th, or Thursday,
right,
the 24th.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I believe that You know, James Comey, knowing the way he has operated,
he'll do it.
I don't know what the answer is yet, but if he does end up testifying, he'll testify.
Yeah.
He's done it before. Oh, yes. He did it back when he talked about, you know, go back to his old testimony 10 years ago.
Right.
It's so amazing. It's almost 10 years ago to the day when he testified about this extraordinary, dramatic hospital scene in which he and Robert Mueller at the time, were threatening to quit because they were being pressured into, you know, signing off on
warrantless wiretapping,
surveillance order.
Right.
Right. So he testified about that. There was, you know, he was certainly not afraid to do that. So, you know, but just getting back to the coverage and what we're learning, you know, I think that it's really important to kind of understand that there's no loyalty, you know, to Trump. There's no loyalty, you know, even among people really in his inner circle. And when I was covering Enron, when I was covering this corporation, Enron, you know, that imploded in a wave of accounting scandal, what I saw was businessmen and women who were so quick to turn on each other. And there was just no loyalty, and in a way, that's, you sort of get the sense here as well, is that it feels like they're, you know, it's almost as the government's operating as a business, and, you know, everyone's pushing everyone else under the bus. There's no loyalty to anyone. And that's why we're seeing so much, you know, so many leaks.
It's amazing. And we just have to, I mean, I sit here and go, okay, what's next? As if this wasn't enough. There's so much there. And I believe the latest one, the revelation that if true, what Comey's memo outlines, that Trump asked him to basically drop the investigation against Flynn, that is obstruction of justice. That is an impeachable offense. I just sort of want this to hold on for another 18 months until hopefully the Democrats have control of the House.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's getting pretty bad. I mean, you look at, you know, the way that Wall Street responded today.
Yes.
You know, the Dow drops 300 points.
That's right.
The first drop of that magnitude since September 9th due to political turmoil.
Right.
It's just, there's a ripple effect.
Yes.
And where do you go from here? It's only going to get worse.
You
I
know,
mean, whether it is the firing of other people, whether it is more revelations. And you can be sure, look, if there were discussions about ending the investigation into Flynn, there is probably a lot more there.
Oh, yeah.
We still don't have Donald Trump's tax return.
No.
There's a lot more that will be revealed.
And we have on Friday, he leaves for this 10-day trip to the Middle East.
Right. To the Middle East.
Israel, to
Incredible.
Saudi Arabia. Oh, my God. After what happened this week, I just just get ready, because this roller coaster we're on is only going to get more treacherous.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, no, it's no question that it will just. I don't think it's going to get better, Nicole.
No,
I'm not going to say it's going to get worse before it gets better.
I don't think it's going to get better. It's going to keep getting worse.
It's just going to get worse. And the question is that, you know, how long will the Republicans hold on for? How long will they, you know, try to, you know, stand behind this president, this administration? What will Mitch McConnell, you know, do? What will he continue to shrug off? But I think that as this, you know, as the turmoil continues, and essentially what does that mean? That you're not going to be able to get your agenda across, right?
That's the good news.
To get your policies through.
Right.
So people are going to become frustrated, and they're going to lose, you know, if you look back on, you know, just history there, you know, the midterms, as you noted, it's just going to change hands.
Yeah. Well, let's hope, and hope we can hold on until then. That's, you know, that's the issue. But the good news is, I mean, we have Justin Amash and Jason Chaffetz both now signaling that you know, they want to see the memo. They want more. So there are cracks in the dike forming. So
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Jason Leopold, I'm glad you're on the job.
Well, thank you, Nicole, and I appreciate it.
And I appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much. It's great to talk with you, and hopefully we can do it more often.
Yes, I'd like that.
Me
and,
too.
I will talk to you soon, let's see what the rest of the week holds for.
Oh, boy. Okay, strap in. It's going
to
be a rough ride.
Soon.
Thanks, Jason. Bye-bye. Jason Leopold. Whoops, I cut him off. Senior investigative reporter at BuzzFeed. And BuzzFeed's investigative news unit. It sounds like they really have it together over there. See, BuzzFeed is not all... listicles and things. Oh, I'm on the wrong computer. I told you we have a busy show today, didn't I? We had a request, actually a few requests for guests yesterday, and we do have one of those guests coming up. I'm not even going to break. What we'll do is put what's news at the end of the show today, because already I'm running late. We're getting Will Bunch on the line. Will Bunch is a... And there he is. Hey, Will Bunch. It's Nicole Sandler calling.
Hey, Nicole. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, sure. It's always great to talk with you. And I read your Attitude blog at the Philadelphia Daily News all the time. And there's a couple of things I wanted to talk with you about. One of them is the same thing that's making all of our heads collectively explode across this country. You have a great piece, America is Swimming in Uncharted Waters After Trump's
Blabbling. That might be a better word for it.
It is blabbling. But also I want to talk about maybe we'll end on the good news note, because at least we'll give people something.
However you want to do it. And there is good news.
Yes, I know. Right.
Places, which is like doubly amazing.
And that's the other reason why, first of all, you were a request from our listeners, because I mentioned yesterday that I had today open, although I had been talking to Jason Leopold last week about coming on. But your name was one that came out and people said, have Will Bunch back on. And I thought, Will's
that's
got a
fantastic lot
to say.
Well, thanks to everybody who suggested that. Thank you.
Sure. And they're listening in the chat rooms. And then there is the good news, which we'll get to. But, I'm reading this piece and you sort of have the timeline of the last week. And you can take it even back a little further. If you take it back to a week ago, Monday, I was writing it down. Trump took the weekend off to play golf. There was that. But aside from that, you had Monday, Sally Yates testifying. Tuesday, Trump fires Comey. Wednesday is the meeting with the Russians in the Oval Office. Thursday is when Trump undermines McMaster and admits that he did give information out, saying he has the right to do so. Friday is when Trump threatened Comey with the tapes. Monday, we learned about the information to the Russians. And then yesterday, we find out about the Comey memo with Trump asking Comey to just let that go, meaning the investigation, the FBI investigation into Flynn. This is, as I mentioned yesterday, my head is spinning so fast, I think that the split pea soup is going to come puking out of my mouth.
Yeah, it's really shocking. It's funny. One of the things, in fact, I'm starting to figure out what I'm going to write for my column for tomorrow's paper, because Thursday is one of the days that they have my column slotted to run in the Daily News. And I think I'm so exhausted from like the shock and awe of like Trump that I might take a step back and write kind of a more atmospheric piece about it, because. I was 14 and 15 during Watergate. I was a adolescent or teenager, but I was a geek. I was really into politics. Followed every minute. Raced home from summer camp to watch John Dean, who's now my Twitter buddy. Follow
yes,
each other.
Right.
To watch his testimony on TV. I rushed out and read the Senate Watergate Committee's report. They made it into a paperback book. But it was funny. Like I didn't imagine at the time, living to some point, 40 years later, where some of the younger people who follow me on Twitter, I get emails all the time now, is this what Watergate was like? Or how did you remember Watergate? How did this play out? You know, I feel like the old, you know, grizzled old, you know, storyteller,
the old reporter
of yesterday. But, you know, I mean, it's weird because on many levels, it's just remarkably similar to Watergate. You know, I mean, you know, some of the paranoia, you know, the, just the, you know, stunning, you know, efforts to obstruct justice and you know, stuff that more stuff that came out today about just Trump's war on the press, that he wants to have reporters arrested. I mean, there's very many similarities to Nixon. But on the other hand, you know, I would also say, I mean, Watergate played out kind of, especially now, if you compared it to today, it played out kind of in slow motion, you know. I mean, it played out over 2 years. Which,
well, you got to realize.
In our politics is an eternity. I mean, you had the Watergate break-in, which, you know, didn't make news. It didn't make as much news.
Yeah, because it was a little two-bit burglary.
At the time, happened right? In June of 72. Nixon still got reelected because it wasn't a big enough story. Mm-hmm. Then it was like the winter spring of 73 when you had a bunch of revelations and it became a big scandal and they had the Senate Watergate hearings. And then it took a whole another year after that, you know, to get impeached. And I mean, there were some very slow months where not too much happened on the Watergate front and the scandal dragged out. This is coming every day, day after day.
New revelations, new more shoes dropping. But the difference was we didn't have the internet and we didn't have cable news. And so it was the Washington Post. It was Woodward and Bernstein doing this, you know, at times smacking their heads against the wall, trying to break through.
Yeah. So, another thing people don't remember is, you know, on the electronic media front, you know, CBS News was really big on the Watergate scandal, and actually before the election in '72, when Woodward and Bernstein got cranked up, you know, Walter Cronkite did this thing on the CBS Evening News where he devoted 18 minutes to Watergate out of the 30-minute newscast, and that was shocking. That was a huge deal at the time, you know. And the thing is, like now, I mean, 18 minutes, you know, I mean,
that's an interesting number.
We have 24 hours a day of this on two different channels, right? Uh-huh. So, I mean, think about that. I mean,
but 18 minutes was also the length of the gap in the tape that Rosemary Woods erased, right? And I'm thinking about
that's ironic. Yeah,
how
I know,
ironic,
exactly.
Right? And in relation to Trump's threats that he has tape on Comey with their dinner, which could have been as much as his cell phone in his jacket pocket recording, which, you know, in which case we may never know, because it wasn't this clunky recording system in the Oval Office. It could be something.
Well, given everything that happened with Nixon, I mean, it's almost certain that he wouldn't have set up a formal taping system, but you don't need, like you said, you don't need to do that in this day and age. You can just put your cell, you know, you can put your cell phone in your front pocket, right, and just hit the button.
That's
And record. Maybe he did that. I mean, he's just so crazy. I mean, I'm waiting to find out that Trump has an enemies list like Nixon and like who's on that. You know?
I wouldn't doubt it. Look, remember at the beginning of this administration when certain reporters and news organizations were banned from the White House briefing room, right?
Essentially an enemies list. Yeah,
that's right.
Absolutely.
And now, of course, the threats to throw journalists in jail. I just asked Jason Leopold, who, you know, was dubbed a FOIA terrorist by the government, if he's scared.
Right.
I wonder if journalists are really getting nervous that they're being targeted for simply doing their jobs.
In theory, maybe you should be scared, but that's just not the personality of the most journalists I knew.
No,
that they don't really think like that.
Right.
I'm sure Jason told you he doesn't think like that.
Nope,
you know,
not at
it's
all.
Just like, you know, this is what we do. And, you know, I guess probably because it's lucky. I mean, God knows the free press and free speech isn't perfect in this country, but it is better than it has been in our lifetime, better than it is in most parts of the world. I write several pieces every week criticizing the government and don't worry about getting thrown in jail or having other things
happen
to me yet. But
Although, I'm quick to point out, you know, Reporters Without Borders just released their Freedom of the Press Index for 2017 just a week or two ago, and we've fallen to number 43. Actually, we were lower than that during the Black Lives Matter and during Ferguson, where journalists were being beaten up and thrown in jail. So we rose a couple of points, but we're dropping again. But we're number 43, so it's not a whole lot to brag about. We should be, if you look at our constitution.
It's an embarrassment.
It really is.
If we're going to be as good as we say we are, we should be number one, or we should be number five. You know.
Yeah.
You know, if not, then we shouldn't be going around the world telling people about American exceptionalism, because being number 48 is not exceptional, is it?
No, it's not. Now, Will Bunch, speaking about going around the world and speaking about American exceptionalism, Donald Trump is taking off on Friday for a 10-day trip to the Middle East, where he'll go to Israel, people he just betrayed by leaking their classified information to the Russians, something that we were specifically warned against.
Right.
He's going to Saudi Arabia, where I just read they've invited some other despot leader, and I'm drawing a blank now what country it is, but a dictator to come and meet with Trump, and he's like, cool, the more the merrier, it seems.
Probably somewhere where his sons are doing a development deal.
I wouldn't doubt it.
I think they are very active. And I don't know if it's Dubai or I know in a couple of these or Abu Dhabi. I know a couple
yes,
of these.
Yes, I think it might have been
active,
Abu Dhabi. It might have been. But
I mean the overlap. I mean, there's just so much here, isn't there? I mean, the overlap between the business interests and the politics just never stops.
And so when you look at impeachable offenses, certainly the many violations of the Emoluments Clause would be one. That's a term that so many of us learned this year. But, you know, just what happened, the obstruction of justice charges. Do you think this president will be impeached?
I do. I think he should have been impeached for the emolument stuff.
Yep.
I don't think he would be. Let me put it this way. I don't think he would be impeached alone for the emolument stuff.
But in conjunction with
impeachment on the Comey stuff, obstruction of justice. I mean, if you remember that when Nixon wasn't impeached, but when the committee approved the impeachment articles against Nixon, they did, because Nixon was just so scandal scarred at that point. I mean, they did expand to other areas, including they debated, and I forget if it passed. Honestly, I can't remember. But one of the impeachment articles was about his conduct of the war in Cambodia. It was expanded beyond Watergate to look at some of his other abuses of power. And so, I don't think they were going to impeach, especially with the Republican majority, they weren't going to impeach Trump over the Emoluments Clause. But I mean, if this Comey obstruction of justice matter gained steam, why wouldn't they? Like any prosecutor, you throw in extra charges, right, to build your case. So, it's possible this could all, and maybe the goal is just to make it so overwhelming that
then he'll resign.
Then, like Nixon, he resigns, right? Other than having to spare the nation of the ordeal of the impeachment. On the other hand, if he is, I think he's on a track right now to get impeached. Would he be convicted? I mean, remember, you have to get 67 votes out of the 100 senators to be convicted and removed from office. So are there, 33,
Well, that's why I want to wait until after the 2018 midterms, if this is going to happen. Let's change the makeup of Congress a little bit. But,
Even if the Democrats ran the table in the Senate election in 2018, they'd have, 50, they might get 51, 52 seats if they just did incredibly well.
That's right.
If they held all 25 seats, which would be amazing, and then won a few more because Trump is so unpopular, that's 52 votes and they need 67.
Right.
You know,
and
so.
then there's the other, you know, the other shoe. That's our theme today. The other shoe, which is Mike Pence, who is, you know, a Christian fundamentalist Sharia law kind of guy who would love nothing more than to turn us into a Christian Sharia nation. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's frightening.
Yeah, I mean,
the idea.
You know, I mean, Trump's scandalous behavior is exploding so quickly, though, and this situation is like so unprecedented and so spiraling out of control. You know, I wonder. I mean, I don't know. We can't get anything done in this country, so maybe I'm crazy to even speculate. But I wonder if there would be some way to, get a deal where. Pence would be required to pick, nominate his own vice president. And I wonder if there would be an effort to get both of them out and have him pick, somebody who'd be a consensus president that everybody could tolerate for the next 3 years until the next election.
I have no idea.
Is that, of course, with our luck, that would probably be Joe Lieberman or somebody terrible. But I just saw
in the chat room somebody wrote that Joe Lieberman's name is now being floated as a new FBI chief.
That's why he actually pops in my head. But he's the kind of person. I made a joke on Twitter last week, but I almost wonder is like, you know, I could a chain of events where. Where the 48th president becomes Merrick Garland, it may be funny after he doesn't get the Supreme Court thing, but go ahead and make him president, right?
Oh my god!
If they really want to just undo this like national nightmare, to borrow another phrase from Watergate, you'd almost have to move beyond Trump, Pence, and because remember, if Trump and Pence, again, I can't imagine this happening, but if Trump and Pence were removed at the same time, you know, bang, bang, or within a couple of days of each other.
Then we get Paul Ryan.
Then the president would be Paul Ryan, right?
Unless we wait until after the midterms and Democrats take the House back. Of course, Nancy Pelosi is never going to step down, at least as long as Steny Hoyer is there, according to Howie Klein. So we'd get President Pelosi. We'd get, you know, a first female president and a Democrat all in one.
It would be great, but can the Republic endure another? I can't even do the math. 20 months of this?
I don't think we can.
Things will happen. Things will happen overseas. North Korea could do something crazy, or some other military aggression could happen, and we would have this guy that we're waiting to impeach. With his finger on the nuclear button. It's just like, I just don't think that's an acceptable situation for people.
Nor do I. So let's do this, Will Bunch, because now my heart's starting to race. Let's get some good news. It was an election day in Philadelphia yesterday. So what happened?
Well, we were electing a new district attorney, which was kind of a surprise. I mean, we had this incumbent Seth Williams, who, a year or two ago seemed to be just on track for another boring reelection for a third term, kind of ran as a reformer, ended up being kind of an establishment status quo. And the status quo in Philadelphia, just quick background. I mean, Philadelphia has had this really harsh kind of draconian criminal justice system going back all the way to the days of Frank Rizzo back in the 60s and 70s. Unlike the more urbane cities of the Northeast, we pursued the death penalty with a vengeance. Mass incarceration, which is a problem all over the country, but is out of control around these parts. Asset forfeiture, stop and frisk. A policing, criminal justice type abuse, and it's probably happening here in Philadelphia. Anyway, Seth Williams gets caught up in a huge scandal. I won't bore your listeners with all the details, but, was indicted a couple months ago, is not running for reelection. In fact, he's going on trial this summer. And so you had this, wide open race to replace him. And, I mean, this city is really, has just become so much more progressive. I mean, it's really unbelievable what's happened just in, my recent lifetime to see progressivism really take hold here in Philadelphia, which used to be democratic but conservative is what we used to be. Hmm. And right at the kind of deadline, a veteran civil rights attorney, the guy who defended, protesters at the 2000 RNC that took place in Philadelphia,
right.
defended Occupy when a bunch of them were arrested, defended people from Black Lives Matter when they were, had some legal entanglements. kind of shocked the city by getting in the race.
His name?
Really, Larry Krasner, Krasner is his name. Mm-hmm. And so really surprised people by getting a lot of support. And then it turns out that his race ended up kind of dovetailing with the billionaire George Soros, liberal billionaire, has made criminal justice his big cause in the last couple of years. And he's been spending millions of dollars on local races that you wouldn't
wow.
expect. And this became a big thing for George Soros, who actually spent $1.45 million on ads, get out the vote, through independent expenditure. I should try and add real quickly. I don't like that. I want big money out of politics.
Right.
And,
no, it should be a local race. Let it be
even
local.
Even when it's
right.
big money on my side, but
I hear you.
For a candidate I support, but. You know, at the same time, I also argued I don't think Krasner should have been penalized for that. And, well, clearly he wasn't. So last night was the election, and he basically, pretty much smashed his other six opponents. I mean, he got, in a seven-candidate race, got nearly 40% of the vote, which
wow.
is, and won by 18 percentage points. And it was just really, really, really the most exciting day for the progressive movement in Philadelphia in a long time. And the other thing is, Philadelphia is now going to go from being, one of the darkest places in the country when it came to our criminal justice system to hopefully we're going to be a hothouse of reform, right? That he's going to, try to be a district attorney who, will hopefully continue to try and reduce crime, which already has gone down here, but do it in a more humane fashion where we don't, nonviolent offenders aren't being sent away for long jail sentences. One of the things he's pledged to do away with is the cash bail system here, where people are essentially locked up for being poor. Hopefully that's going to come to an end in Philadelphia. I mean, he's made it clear that his office will not pursue the death penalty under any circumstance.
Wow.
Really, really a remarkable turn of events. I mean, in my piece, in my column that ran today, you can read on my blog, Attitude, I called it a revolution. It was a revolutionary change for the city.
So that's
and it was, and in this era of Trump, like you said, really good news for the progressive movement. I mean, there was a lot of thought that the what's been stirred up by the Trump resistance, gave a lot of the momentum to Krasner's campaign. So there's that.
This could portend, for the future. This is the kind of thing that we're looking at. And now next week, a week from tomorrow, I believe, is the special election in Montana, where there's
yeah.
A singing cowboy whose name is escaping me at the moment. Who's the
Rob Quist?
Yeah. Yes,
Quist.
Who's looking
Rob Quist,
who could take this thing. There's one congressional seat in the state of Montana. It's an at-large seat. Bernie Sanders is going to be there campaigning all weekend. He could actually
That's
win.
Great. Yeah,
and this could be the beginning of a wave, and we could have seen it from Philadelphia. Now, but Pennsylvania went for Trump. So did that surprise you?
Yeah, it did. I mean, it was interesting. Things played out very unevenly here. But what I mean by that is that the affluent, there's a fair amount of affluent suburbs that surround Philadelphia, and those communities actually went for Hillary in bigger numbers than they had voted for Obama, which was surprising.
Wow.
But they were offset by two things. One, like in a number of other cities, the African American and non-white turnout was not horrible, but it was just not what it was during the Obama year. So you had that problem. And then the bigger problem is, Pennsylvania is by and large a Rust Belt state. It used to be one of the most unionized and most industrialized states in the country. Coal mining, all sorts of factories. Philadelphia has been a very blue collar city, and we have a lot of those. The classic not college educated
mm-hmm.
white working class voters, and they absolutely broke for Trump, especially in cities like Scranton. The same thing. It's not even rural voters. It's these mid-sized cities that used to be industrial, like Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, Erie, Pennsylvania,
uh-huh.
another another city like that on the Great Lakes.
What about Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh, you know, I mean, this is not totally a new issue. I mean, you and I both remember the Reagan Democrats, right, of the 80s,
know,
and
sadly.
And Pittsburgh was actually kind of famous as the Reagan Democrat capital of America. So it's not a totally new phenomenon. But and in fact, you know, a lot of blue collar voters, you know, during the Clinton years, they drifted back. I mean, it totally was a surprise because, I mean, Democrats had won every statewide presidential vote since George H.W. Bush in 88 was the last Republican to carry Pennsylvania before Trump did. So, yeah, it was pretty stunning. I mean, nobody saw it coming. I mean, we knew it was going to be close. It's always close here, but the Democrats always pulled it out. And like I said, there was movement towards Hillary in affluent suburbs, but it was just undercut by big white working class turnout and somewhat depressed non-white turnout. So that's the story of Pennsylvania. I mean, I think it's very winnable again for the Democrats in 2020 when they, it's hard to say because God only knows
anything can happen between
now and then.
Oh my God, it seems like a lifetime.
I almost shudder to think. I don't even want to go there. Right?
So, I know. Well, we've got 2018 first. Do you have are either of your senators up for election in 2018?
Actually, oddly enough, it's going to be a year where the Democrats are going to be. I mean, the two marquee races in Pennsylvania are Democrats trying to hold on.
Mm.
Bob Casey is a very interesting story. I mean, he's somebody that, progressives and people on the more left side of the Democratic Party always kind of rolled their eyes at, you know, and back in his early years, he was, I mean, I wouldn't even call him pro-gun now, but he was kind of more of a pro, you know, had some NRA type support in his early years. He's from a very Catholic political tradition and he's not, certainly personally, he's not pro-choice, personally, but then, you know, he's evolved as a politician. Like I said, he grew more liberal on the gun issue. He, you know, supports funding for Planned Parenthood and other issues like that. But then when Trump got elected, it's funny, people here in Pennsylvania now call him Woke Bob Casey. That's like his new nickname. I mean, he's been like a leader of the resistance, of the Trump resistance, really. I mean, and on social media and actions, he was the one who raced to Philadelphia International Airport on the, that weekend that the travel ban was announced. Played a personal role in getting several detainees at the airport freed. So he's gone from having lukewarm support on the left to being really kind of a hero of the progressive movement in this state, which has been a really amazing development. I've written about it. And then the governor, Tom Wolf, who is a good, solid, progressive governor. I mean, some surveys have rated him as the most liberal governor in the country, which is interesting. He's had to deal with a Republican legislature in Harrisburg, the state capital, and it's been very hard for him to get anything done. I think he's a very mild-mannered guy, doesn't offend people. I think he's still personally popular.
Right.
I think between that and I think between Trump's declining approval, I think he has a very good chance of being reelected, but he's drawing a lot of opponents from the Republicans.
Well, we think
that he's going to be beatable next year or so.
We'll see. Will Bunch, it's so great to talk with you. I promise not to wait so long before I invite you back on the show.
Oh yeah, no, it's great, Nicole. Anytime.
Thank you so much.
For you, so.
Thank you, Will
okay.
Bunch. Find
right.
him. Thank you, Will. Bye bye. Find
right,
Will
bye,
at attitude.com. And with that, we are done with another show. Tomorrow, Howie Klein will be here. I will leave you with today's edition of What's News. Thank you, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
I read the news today. Oh, boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Chris Hayes opened his MSNBC program on Tuesday evening, recounting the unbelievable events emanating from and plaguing the Trump White House over the past 9 days.
Last Monday, it was former acting Attorney General Sally Yates testifying that she warned the White House that its then National Security Advisor Michael Flynn was lying about his improper conversations with the Russian ambassador, therefore vulnerable to Russian blackmail. On Tuesday, Tuesday. Trump fires his FBI director, James Comey, who had been leading the investigation into the Trump campaign's possible collusion with Russia on Wednesday. The president welcomes two Russian officials into the Oval Office, including Sergei Kislyak, the very same Russian ambassador whose conversations with Michael Flynn prompted Yates's warning. The following day, Thursday, in an interview with NBC's Lester Holt, the president undermines his administration's claim that he fired Comey for his handling of the Hillary Clinton email investigation, saying he was thinking of, quote, this Russia thing when he fired him. Then, day after that, president threatened Comey on Twitter, suggesting he had secret tapes of their conversations, something the White House continues to neither confirm nor deny. On Monday, where we learned the president, astoundingly, gave highly classified intelligence to Russian officials in that Oval Office meeting that could have compromised intelligence gathering from an allied nation.
While we were still unwrapping the details of the story about Trump's meeting in the Oval Office with the Russians, where he leaked classified information provided to the U.S. by Israel with the implicit warning that the Russians were not to have access to it, the New York Times broke perhaps the most damning of all stories implicating Trump on Tuesday afternoon.
And now, the stunning news that Comey wrote in a February memo that the president asked him to end the federal investigation into Flynn.
From the New York Times article written by Michael Schmidt, President Trump asked the FBI director, James B. Comey, to shut down the federal investigation into Mr. Trump's former national security advisor, Michael T. Flynn, in an Oval Office meeting in February, according to a memo Mr. Comey wrote shortly after the meeting. Quote, I hope you can let this go, the president told Mr. Comey, according to the memo. The documentation of Mr. Trump's request is the clearest evidence that the president has tried to directly influence the Justice Department and FBI investigation into links between Mr. Trump's associates and Russia. Michael Schmidt explains.
But this is really sort of the first evidence to date of the president trying to influence the investigation. The most important thing is that the president is not supposed to try and influence or impede any type of FBI investigation. And in this case, he went to the FBI director and said, you know, my national security advisor, Mike Flynn, did nothing wrong, and you guys need to move on from this. Look, I've been spending a lot of time over the past few days trying to understand what went on between Mr. Comey and Mr. Trump, and trying to understand what it was that Mr. Trump didn't like about Mr. Comey, and what was it about Mr. Trump that really concerned Mr. Comey. And in the process of that, I learned that there was a series of memos that Comey had written about every single interaction that he had had with Trump, because Comey was so concerned about what Trump may try and do to the FBI. And he described in detail how Mr. Trump tried to influence him and tried to say to him, hey, you really need to drop this investigation. And Comey put a lot of detail in these memos. The question is that Republicans up until this point have really resisted calls for a special prosecutor. They have said there's no need for that and the Justice Department can handle this. The question now is whether the disclosure that Trump tried to influence Comey is enough to get the Republicans to say, okay, we need for there to be a special prosecutor, we need for there to be a special commission to look into this, because that will prevent the president from trying to meddle with anything.
Some of the stories surrounding the big stories are also astounding. Senator Richard Burr, chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, when asked if he'd try to get a copy of the Comey memo, actually said,
I think the burden is on the New York Times. If they're reporting it and they've got somebody that's got the document, they need to get the document and get it released.
Well, you know, the Senate has subpoena power. The New York Times does not. I never thought I'd say this, but thank goodness for Jason Chaffetz, chair of the House Oversight Committee, who tweeted, at GOP Oversight is going to get the Comey memo if it exists. I need to see it sooner rather than later. I have my subpoena pen ready. And then he sent a letter to the FBI requesting, quote, all memoranda, notes, summaries, and recordings referring or relating to any communications between Comey and the president to be provided no later than May 24th. Senator Burr, pay attention and stay tuned. Believe it or not, there's other news happening. Congressman Al Green of Texas took to the House floor Wednesday morning to officially call for the impeachment of Donald Trump.
And this is where I stand. I will not be moved. The president must be impeached.
And Chelsea Manning is on her way home. 7 years after being arrested for passing secrets to WikiLeaks in the largest breach of classified information in U.S. history, she walked out of a U.S. military prison Wednesday morning at about 2 a.m. The final 28 years of her 35-year sentence were commuted by President Obama before he left office. I got good news. And that's a little bit of What's News for today. If you appreciate these What's News segments, I hope you'll consider a contribution. What's News and The Nicole Sandler Show are 100% listener-supported, and we need your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.